You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. Find me online, jackiedaily.com, and on Twitter at Jackie Daily Host. Subscribe for free. You can almost pick your favorite podcasting outlet. I'm probably there. And if you're not sure, just, I would say Google it, but I don't like Google. Go to DuckDuckGo or Jibberoo or some other place that respects your freedom and privacy and search Jackie Daily Show, free listening, subscribe for free. You can do that. All right, coming up this show, I will speak with Daniel Turner. Love Daniel. He is the founder of Power the Future. You see him on Fox Business and other fine media outlets. He has a new report out from Power the Future. It's entitled Crisis, the Man-Made Energy Shortfall Heading for America. And he goes through Europe and describes and really predicts, gets on record right now, so you can hold him to his predictions, his, you might call them prophecies, except he's not a prophet. But he says Europe is in big trouble. Europe is in big trouble. People there could be facing a life or death energy shortage this winter, just as happened in Texas last February when hundreds of Texans died in the winter storm. For some reason, no one wants to talk about those deaths. You know, they probably told you one or two here or there. No, there are estimates as high as 700 people died in Texas. We had excess deaths, some of them documented as relating to the storm, some of them not. There are actually certain types of death that happen in the cold. People who have weak hearts will actually expire in sub-optimal temperatures in their home, for example. And we saw an excess of that in the state of Texas. Well, Europe needs to get ready. And Daniel explains why. This is totally man-made, bad policy, and preventable and reversible. If only they will open their eyes and do what needs to be done, which is use reliable energy and stop, moving on to too much renewable when it can't get the job done. In the middle of the winter, you need still your nuclear plants. Germany, stop shutting them down, please, and other issues. Now, 20% of Americans cannot pay their energy bill at least once, 1 month last year. Things will be worse this year. We're expecting increases of about 54%, depending on what you use to fuel your home or to heat your home, electricity versus propane or something like that, for example. Basically, total energy prices up 33.3% on the year. Fuel oil, 60% more expensive than last year. Electricity up 6.5%. And natural gas up more than 25%. I'm going to give you some tips on how to save money in light of all that, since we probably can't do anything about it in the short term. Really, we can't reverse bad policy so quickly. And then I will tell you about how it's getting a little scary out there. There's a guy in Sweden, who now has developed a COVID microchip. And he says he's going to, you know, force his technology out there onto the world, quote, whether we like it or not. This will be a chip implanted in your arm that literally will tell your vaccine status. And according to the French leader, Emmanuel Macron, you will not be able to buy or sell or participate in some marketplace activities in France if you do not have the vaccine. He says he, quote, really wants to hack off, I'm sterilizing the language, the unvaccinated of France. And he says, I'm not going to put them in jail or forcibly vaccinate them, but I'm going to tell them from January 15, you will no longer be able to go to the restaurant, have a drink, go for a coffee, to the theater or to the movies. So that's his take. And then Justin Trudeau of Canada gave a scary speech saying, you know, basically, these unvaccinated people take up space. Take up space. Are we going to tolerate them? Sounds very Hitler-esque. And the fact that Canadians vote for this guy, assuming they have free and fair elections, maybe that's a big assumption, I don't know. But it just proves they don't know their history. Or you would never elect someone who talks like this. Guy's scary. And by the way, he says 80% of Canadians are vaccinated. Well, that means they've reached herd immunity. But he doesn't seem to care. And why am I talking about COVID in relationship to climate change and energy policy? Well, I'll give you an example. There's a paper published in a prestigious political science journal lamenting that democracy might not be appropriate for curbing climate change, and that essentially, modeled after COVID-19 lockdowns, we can fight climate with emergencies and authoritarian environmentalism. I put that in quotes, okay? Authoritarian environmentalism. This is a professor of in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Sheesh. Abstract. Is authoritarian power ever legitimate? While under normal conditions, maintaining democracy and rights is typically compatible with guaranteeing safety in emergency situations, conflicts between these two aspects of legitimacy can and often do arise. An example is the COVID-19 pandemic, during which severe limitations on free movement and association have become legitimate techniques of government. Climate change poses an even graver threat to public safety. Consequently, I argue, this is the professor I'm quoting, legitimacy may require a similarly authoritarian approach, unquote. This is what is being published in a very prestigious political science journal in the United States. And you couple this with these quotes from Trudeau, from Macron, and they're not the only ones. You know, then I run across the Swedish company inventing microchips to implant in our arms so they can instantly read our vaccination status. And I'm saying it's getting a little scary out there. Otherwise, some things haven't changed. I maintain my prognostication that the world population will continue to grow, and therefore we will actually use more fossil fuels and nuclear energy, not less. That's another segment I will cover. As an example, the Wall Street Journal, I'm looking at it above the fold. It says, Beijing targets low birth rate. Okay, one of your most populous countries on Earth is actually working to replace its abortion clinics with fertility clinics. They intend to grow their population because people are assets. When we talk about markets, we're talking about people. And some countries, like China, are going to invest in their people, grow their population, and I strongly assume use more resources. I don't say that is a negative thing. It simply reinforces my point that, in fact, I don't think oil and gas will be stranded assets or coal. We will need more of them, not less, if there are more people. And countries like China continually motorize and modernize. That means more demand, not less. So all these people who are divesting from fossil fuels because they think it's uninvestable or a long-term short, I'm not sure I agree with that. Certainly not right now. Probably not in 5 years, probably not in 10. And finally, I will share with you some quick excerpts from the Wall Street Journal's opinion page, the editorial board, writing Zuckerbucks. Zuckerbucks shouldn't pay for elections, and why they object to Mark Zuckerberg injecting between $300 and $400 million into the 2020 election. I'm giving you just a handful, a sampling of the shenanigans. By the way, I saw that True the Vote gave some information to the Georgia authorities showing that there were, I believe it was more than a couple hundred people who, with geo's targeting of their cell phones, they could tell were going to drop boxes in the middle of the night and dropping off lots of ballots. That's a problem. It's called ballot harvesting. It's illegal in some states like Georgia. And so now there's an investigation more than a year after the election. Oh, both elections. November 3rd, January 5th. Do you see how the information just keeps coming out? Maybe the people who expressed concern about this weren't crazy. More and more information coming out. The investigation is happening now in Georgia. They got that Raffensperger guy in charge, so I'm just not sure how much confidence I have in this thing. But it is happening. That is a fact. I wanted you to know. And listen, these stories are happening every day. There are ongoing efforts in so many states, not just the swing states, by the way, to investigate what happened in 2020 and to try to safeguard your elections from billionaires who'd like to pay for the staff to do things like cure your ballots, for example. Okay? We're working on it. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. Find me online, jackiedaly.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Jackie Daly Host. That's Jackie with no E. Okay, I hold here in my hands a copy of Power the Future's report, basically laying out what happens should we continue to follow the example of Europe when it comes to this war on fossil fuels that apparently a lot of people over there think is moving too slowly, not too fast, despite what is really Europe's back up against the wall, and ours could be next. So here with me is the founder of Power the Future on the line, Daniel Turner. Welcome back.
Jackie, thank you so much for having me on again.
Of course. Good to have you back, and good to see you on TV. I feel like I see you all the time now. I turn the TV random evening. There he is again, Daniel Turner, getting the word out. People like you are the reason why, Daniel, that this country is actually the country with the most hope when it comes to having a reasoned, dispassionate, objective discussion on energy policy, which is a discussion about inflation and war and heating your home or eating, the choice. This country actually is about 50-50, whereas in Europe, they have just a blank check from their electorate to do all the crazy things they're doing. So first, catch us up on what has happened. Do you think that the Europeans are in big trouble this winter? Explain why.
Yeah, and we wanted to document what's happening in Europe now before the situation got worse, which sadly I think is inevitable. It will happen this winter. And you know, a lot of times when there's a man-made disaster, some catastrophe, some result of a terrible policy, we look at it ex post facto, right? Mm-hmm. And we look at it after it's resulted, and we say, boy, we should have seen that one coming.
Yes.
Well, this is one I think we can see coming, and so we wanted to document it now so that if it turns the way the math tells us it will turn, we at least, Power the Future, were on record saying this is what was going to happen, and we knew this was going to happen. Europe is a good 20 years further ahead with the green movement than America is. And they are starting to feel real suffering in cost because of these energy policies, which have demonized fossil fuels. We've known for a long time that countries like the United Kingdom and Germany and Denmark, they pay much higher gas and electricity than America does. But now what we're seeing, which is the concerning part, is now there is a true shortage. There is a shortage of natural gas, huge shortage. And there is a shortage of electricity because they are not producing enough. And so rationing has begun. And the cold has really yet to kick in Europe. Winter is just beginning. We're only a couple weeks into it. And I do think this problem is going to get a lot worse. And we have to let Americans know we're headed in this direction if we continue with these crazy green policies.
Yeah, it's kind of... Unfortunately, Texas, where I am, is a little bit of a microcosm of some of the European elements. And the February storm was the perfect example. And I'm telling you, even for people here who lived through it, they didn't learn the lessons. We still haven't fixed the problems. And, you know, if the Texans don't fix it, I'm not too optimistic that Europe is going to get this right. They're going to have some real pain before it's understood what time it is, basically, and in the story of human history, and in this transition that really isn't happening the way they think it is. You point out that this shortage is so different from the past. in the past, you know, the Arab oil embargo is really the product of a breakdown of international relations. Some people don't like some people. They say, we're holding the stuff, the oil. And we say, you can't have any more until you do things we like. You know, like there was not a real genuine, we don't have it problem. There's a, we don't get along problem or agree problem. Here, Europe is actually creating a situation, right, where there's just not going to be enough electricity and gasoline for its people, right? There's just not going to be enough. And we're going to be told, gosh, there are too many people on the planet, Daniel. You know, they're just the planet just can't support this many people. When in fact, this is a man-made problem.
It really is.
If you were advising the Europeans right now, and they called you up and said, Daniel Turner, what do we do? What would you advise?
Yeah, well, the man who heads up the entire European Union's Green New Deal, their green transition, is this man whose name is Frans Timmermans. And we talk about him in the report. And Mr. Timmermans does say very bluntly, we're asking a lot of our people. We're asking a lot of our industry. He makes it inevitable that suffering is just going to be a necessary part of this transition, which is odd because normally the government doesn't look to inflict pain upon its people, right? Isn't that kind of the role of government, is to not inflict pain on its people? So to answer your question, what would I advise the Europeans if I was given the chance is let's stop with the subsidizing of the renewable industry because it's not able to compete and it's creating false numbers. So for example, most of Europe has embraced wind power very, very aggressively. And if they look at a wind turbine and say, okay, at its peak, it can produce X number of kilowatts of electricity per hour, well, they add that to the formula. But that is totally contingent upon the fact that the wind blows. Mr. Timmermans, and we point this out in the report, has noted that for some odd reason in the second half of 2021, the wind did not blow very strong in Europe. At one point, wind was creating 26% of Europe's electricity. In December, it was creating only about 7% of the electricity.
Yeah.
So that huge delta has to be made up somewhere. And what the risk is that they're assuming these wind turbines will always blow at this rate without fail. When they do fail, there is no fossil fuel backup because they're eliminating fossil fuel. They're taking coal offline. Germany just closed three more nuclear power plants. So they are getting rid of what's reliable, and they are hoping that the wind will blow in perpetuity, but it doesn't, right? Texas experienced that in February. It was really freezing rain, and so the wind turbines couldn't blow. But Europe experienced that the last 6 months. The wind stopped blowing very strongly. I don't know why. No one knows why.
Right.
But it did.
Right.
And people suffer as a consequence.
Yeah. Well, and I know at least in the States, at least in Texas, when they do their planning, literally, right, they have a plan for different months because you experience different winds on average in different months. And they'll say, well, on average, we expect 7% of our electricity to come from wind in February on average. And there's the plan. Because really, what else can they do except work off of averages? But what happens when, as last February showed, we have a massive storm and the percentage output goes from 7% to 1.5%? Now what? It's as if no one has thought about this. It's as if no one, this is completely unacceptable. And as you point out, the European equivalent of the Green New Deal is called Fit for 55, effort to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 55%. By the end of the decade. Next sentence, to do this, several radical changes would be required. Listen, Europe. It means banning the sale of gasoline and diesel-powered cars. What? Banning the sale of gasoline? Like, did I read that correctly? Yes, I did. Extreme. That's extreme. And so, Daniel, I read this and I think, you know what? People will die. What I foresee is people will die. And so that's how serious it is. I mean, as you might know, the numbers have been updated here in Texas. Over 200 people died in our storm in February. And some of them died, they literally froze in their homes. you know, maybe they had dementia, they didn't know how to care for themselves or whatever. Some died of carbon monoxide poisoning as they were in their garages running their cars trying to stay warm. Of course, in Europe, you wouldn't even have that option as they ban gasoline, right?
Exactly.
And any number of other problems that happen. But you say, I like this amazing quote, Mr. Timmermans, again, the man running the European effort, again, demonstrating a significant unfamiliarity with anything resembling reality, suggested, quote, we would not be in this position had we had the Green Deal 5 years earlier, since that would have been less dependency on fossil fuels and natural gas. Daniel, I've heard this myself. I lock horns with socialists on purpose every now and then just to hear what's on their mind. What on earth are they thinking? They really believe they're not going fast enough, right? They need to hit the accelerator. Okay.
Yeah.
What is your response to that?
And again, the problem with Mr. Timmermans' rationale is that what is causing the problem in Europe is not a matter of chronology. It's a matter of geology. It's a matter of physics, of wind in this case. So saying, well, if only we had started 5 years ago, we'd be in better shape. That doesn't matter if there is not wind. That doesn't matter if the wind is not blowing your wind turbines. So you could say, well, we need more wind turbines. It still doesn't matter if the wind is not blowing. So we have become reliant on this source of power that we cannot control. And that is one of the huge advantages of fossil fuels, is that we can control it completely. Most coal reactors, for example, can scale. Natural gas electricity can scale, depending upon need, depending upon surge. Nuclear can also scale, which is remarkable, right? Wind can only scale if the wind blows harder. How do we make the wind blow harder? Well, the answer in the Biden administration is clearly money, right? We just spend more money. We keep spending money at the problem, and then let us hope that the wind will blow stronger. And that's where it's very frustrating to deal with these people, because, again, I keep talking about the delta of percentages of how much wind used to blow to what it's blowing now, delta of what coal produces compared to what wind produces. But that delta, I shouldn't be so crass, that delta is the human condition.
Yeah.
There are going to be people who in the process are told, you don't get electricity, or this town has a blackout, or this area loses power. The Texas example you've referenced a few times now, the electric powers that went out were triggered by human action because they knew the grid was faltering.
Yeah.
Someone strategically had to say, turn off this sector, turn off that sector, turn off that sector. Who decides that question?
Right.
And sadly, there are no good answers, but it is scary to think that our government has the power to turn off certain people's electricity, and you know the people who are getting turned off are the least able to fight back. It's not the rich, it's not the powerful, it's not the connected. They're just the average people who have no choice but to suffer at the hands of their government when their government is taking these green actions which cause the problem to begin with.
I'm talking to Daniel Turner of Power of the Future. I'll take a break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jackie Daly Show, and I'm continuing a conversation with Daniel Turner from Power of the Future, and a report they have out explaining how we can avoid what is inevitably going to happen to Europe, probably this winter, if not this winter, surely next winter, if they continue warring against fossil fuels and throwing all their money to renewable energy companies, who, of course, are making out rather fat on these deals. Well, people have less to live on, literally less electricity, less natural gas, less gasoline. So the point of all of this, of course, is supposed to be to save us from warming. And Daniel, I appreciate that on page one of your report, you have an excerpt from the New York Times, 1978. And this is an article titled, International Team of Specialists Finds No End in Sight to 30-Year Cooling Trend in the Northern Hemisphere. And they're citing, too, you know, Dr. Martin Ridgewald, Oceanic Division of the German Weather Service. He sounds credible, explaining And this is 1978, that we have a serious problem on our hands because the Earth is too cool. But then it didn't take until the 80s to completely reverse the prevailing view of it, perhaps because mankind is better at creating heat than cool, I will argue. Yeah. It's easier to monetize, Daniel. And so you also have an Associated Press article here from 1989 that I've actually reviewed before on the show more than once. This is the UN AP. This is titled, UN Predicts Disaster If Global Warming Not Checked. Literally 10 years later, quote, a senior UN official, environmental official, pardon me, says that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. 2000. Entire nations wiped off the face of the earth. So, Daniel, people don't understand how the world's top scientists can get things wrong. And, you know, it's almost like it's impossible in some people's minds that you would dare even question whether someone could be wrong, even here where they might reverse themselves entirely, right, at the highest levels within 10 years. So
it's funny, if you're of a certain age,
right?
Which I definitely am.
Yeah.
You remember these very, very cold and snowy years of your childhood and people from the childhood in the 60s, 70s, 80s, et cetera. And we forget that in that period, they told us the world was going to end because of global cooling. And now we look at that and we say, I don't know, we don't get the snow like we used to when I was a kid. There's definitely global warming happening. And you say, but 40 years ago, you said it was global cooling. So which one is it, right? It is very funny to see these sort of anecdotal and very personal stories. It's like phenomenology dictate climate policy, because that's where we are. And the experts have been wrong for decades now. They've been wrong for decades, but they always promise you this time they got it right.
Well, and they can help you, by the way, you know, with whatever the problem is, as long as you pay enough taxes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the answer. Yes. The answer to everything is pay more taxes and give up more freedom. And so,
yes.
Right? I mean, I don't know any country that has an alternative solution to this. Other than that. So, okay.
I don't know any solution that the environmental left has ever posited for climate change that does not require the growth of government, larger taxes, or the loss of individual freedom, which is remarkable because there are many solutions in other areas of the economy and of public policy. There are many solutions that are not expensive, that don't cost people anything or don't sacrifice people anything. But the climate issue is always one where the solution is found uniquely in the hands of government. And that should warn people about what the real agenda is.
Well, and also it requires the making of many billionaires, multi-billionaires, in the renewable energy space, in the carbon capture space, in the carbon trading space. There's a lot of money to be made. For some people, I will point out, you say, you're talking about the current situation in the U.S. You say, rising prices, energy problems, stagflation. The only thing missing from a full-fledged return to the 1970s is some new music by ABBA and an appearance by Jimmy Carter in a sweater. I read this, I'm like, hey, Daniel, it's not too late. He is still alive. He is still alive. Jimmy Carter is 97. And you know what? It could happen this winter, Daniel. He could be on TV and he could tell us how he was right, right? He saw this coming. And when he was in the White House, he put solar panels on the White House. People forget this. And that was part of the plan in the 70s. And then Reagan took them down. But it's not too late. And in fact, the members of ABBA are still alive. That too could happen again. I saw them on TV not long ago. So... it's not too late. Okay.
But we are in that same era, though. And I was alive in the 70s, but I really wasn't paying much attention to politics. So I do joke often and say, like, I don't remember Carter's malaise, mm-hmm. but this is what it must have felt like.
Yeah.
This sense of just of incredibly high inflation, of goods costing more, of a general sense of anger and frustration in the American people, a sense of hopelessness, and a generally clueless president who just doubles down on the same old tired solutions. And so, we are back in the 70s, and we're substituting Carter for Biden, but much of everything else is the same.
Well, and the worst part is Biden was actually on Capitol Hill when all of this was going down. He saw these mistakes be made. He was there. And so, you know, for him to claim or feign ignorance, like we're at some new, enlightened period here, we've been through this before. This isn't the first time. And he remembers better than most and had a seat at the table, far better than most. So I think an undermade point right now with this inflation that everybody understands, you know, no matter what your politics, no matter how much someone wants to fight with me about fossil fuels or supply side economics, no one can deny that they're being hurt in the pocketbook right now. I'm going to argue, Daniel, that really energy prices are kind of the foundation of the problem. I mean, of course, the spending bills. You know, if you're going to throw trillions of dollars into the economy, yeah, prices will go up. But at the same time, if oil costs now, you know, almost four times as much as it did just a few years ago, and natural gas is going to spike, you know, however many 100% increase, that goes into the price of everything, right? I mean, is there anything that you can think of you buy at the store anywhere that doesn't have the price of oil, gas, or coal built into it?
It's impossible. Really, absolutely everything. It undergirds our entire economy. And that's why the inflation we're feeling is so pervasive, because when we make everything expensive, when we make energy expensive, we make all goods and services expensive. So your point is 100% accurate. And we could argue if that's good or bad. We could argue, should it be another way? That's fine for an intellectual conversation, but that is the reality. And in the process of having these arguments, we shouldn't be using oil. Things should be made from plants or whatever the argument is. In that process, again, we're back to this delta. We're inflicting pain on society. We're inflicting pain on the world at this point, but I'm talking specifically about America. And the ones who feel that pain the most are the most vulnerable. I've said this before on your program, but you know, if you are a certain wealth, filling up your car for $75 or $50 isn't that big of a deal. But if for a lot of Americans, that extra $25 is $25 they're not spending on groceries or they're not spending somewhere else. And this is the really devastating aspect of this point I'm trying to make, is that people will always have to fill up their car and they'll always have to pay their bills. But they don't always have to buy food. And that's the sacrifices people make. They have to drive their kids to school, right? They have to get to work. They have to pay the utility company. So the suffering that is inflicted, you're not able to pass this off somewhere else and say, okay, well, you know, forget about vacation, forget about eating out. Think about all the industries then that begin to suffer. Because with that extra $25 that I would have gone to Chipotle, well, now I'm not going to Chipotle. So small businesses suffer as a result. But really, it's those Americans most vulnerable who suffer, because the 40%, 50% increase in the cost of living will drive them into further poverty. And that's devastating that our government is allowing that to happen. More so, our government is causing that to happen.
Choosing between heating and eating. And as Forbes said, you quote them, the challenge this winter is, quote, not freezing to death. And you've got IHS Market saying U.S. propane supplies are so scarce, resulting in sky-high prices, that the market is headed toward, quote, Armageddon. Armageddon. And you know what? IHS Market, and particularly Daniel Yergin, who's part of that, a leader in that outfit, I'm always talking about how moderated they are in their speech. Like, especially Yergin, no one has a talent for speaking plainly and not offending either side the way the IHS Market does. They're typically very temperate. When they're using the word Armageddon, you know it's bad. Like, these are the most calm, rationed, you know, experienced people. If they say Armageddon, take them seriously. And listen, the solution is right under the ground, but your government won't let you have it because they've made a decision. So with all that, again, talking to Daniel Turner, Power of the Future, you can find all of this if you'd like to do a deep dive on his website. And give us both your website, Daniel, and your Twitter handle.
Yeah, it's powerofthefuture.com. And on Twitter, I am at Daniel Turner PTF for Power of the Future. And thanks for highlighting this report. I hope your readers get a chance to look at it, because we don't want this to happen. We don't want Europe to become America's future. So thanks for the opportunity to talk about it on your great program.
Absolutely. You're always welcome. And when you make your trip to Dallas, let me know. We'll have you in the studio.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Likewise. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. We'll take a break. You're listening to The Jackie Daly Show. Follow me on Twitter at Jackie Daly Host, on Facebook, and subscribe for free. iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, and others. So, I was just given a very good point by Jeff Fisher from Chewing the Fat that I have to share with you. I can't not share it. And I must credit him, because I will admit it did not occur to me. All right. Virginia, you saw that ridiculous line of traffic off I-95. Just south of 395, heading into and out of D.C. Listen, I used to live there. You want to talk about the bane of my existence at that time? Like, I figured out one day, like every day, the most stressful part of my day was commuting from my home up 95 into D.C. It's bumper to bumper. It's crazy. It has been for a long time. Jeff Fisher says, "Did you see the line of traffic? Imagine how great it would have been if only these were electric cars on the highway and not gas-powered cars." Yes. Okay. You know, what's so great about petroleum? People can put it in a tank and bring it to you. Yeah. In emergency vehicles. I don't know. Snowmobiles. With snowshoes on. Whatever. I know what you're thinking. Hey, they can bring batteries too. Well, the problem is, at least according to the latest data, if you took all the battery storage in the country and tried to run New York City on it, it could run for about 45 minutes. Yeah. See, Jeffy's laughing. He thinks I'm joking. He thinks I'm joking. But I think that I learned that from the Texas public policy experts. It was Brent Bennett, I think, Dr. Bennett, who pulled the numbers on that. But yeah, here's the point. We were talking last time about solar-powered tanks for the military. Do you want to be the first to try out solar-powered tanks in a theater of war with your life depending on whether or not the tank runs? Not me. Do you want to be the first to be stuck in a Virginia ice storm in an electric vehicle, where you might be stuck there for a long time? You might need to stay alive in your vehicle, with your vehicle running the heater. Who knows when's the last time you powered your car up, because you were just going from your home to downtown, right? You weren't planning on a interstate trip. You were just trying to get to town, and you get stuck. I saw that one of the Virginia senators got stuck in that. And so, you know, I wonder if any important lessons were driven home while he was sitting there in the traffic jam. I don't know. And by the way, this is Virginia, right? This is not Chicago, where you might actually expect that kind of a storm. But they do happen. I lived there for 7 years. And yes, once in a while, we have Snowmageddon in Virginia, for sure. So, yeah, wouldn't it have been great if those vehicles had all been electric? Jeffy said. He has a great point. We need to think about it more. Yes, we do. Especially since Europe is saying that they're going to ban the sale of gasoline by the end of the decade. Think about it. Just think about it. Could this cause vulnerability for human life? I think it could. I see here, looking at the Straits Times, Oslo, Copenhagen, Reuters reporting, Apparently, Europe's largest wind producers are Britain, Germany, and Denmark. Those three have harnessed only 14% of installed capacity in the third quarter. One more time. Those three countries have harnessed just 14% of installed capacity in the third quarter when gas prices hit record highs, compared with an average of 20 to 26% in previous years, according to Refinitiv data. Refinitiv is capitalized. That's a company. Okay. Do you remember? You might not, but one of the earliest Jackie Daly shows years ago, I pulled a headline that said something like, Germany is getting 50% of its power from renewable sources. Okay, this would lead you to believe that people in Germany are having either wind turbines or solar panels power 50% of their power. Like, wow, what a milestone. What an achievement. And it would be if it were true. What it actually meant was that one day, one time in Germany, for one moment, 50% of what was coming off the grid was generated by renewable power. In other words, it was a moment in time. It was a flash in the pan for a second, probably at a time when demand was at its lowest and the wind was at its strongest. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't take note of that. Well, you know, here's a moment where humankind actually was able to run itself on just 50% of fossil fuels and nuclear, and the rest was renewable. That's important, but please, let's just say what we are and are not saying here. I'm telling you, this is December. This is actually pulled from a moment in December 2021, and it's about the entire third quarter. 14% of installed capacity was all that the lead wind producers, the three top wind producers in Europe, got. And again, let me dig a little deeper and teach you how to very smartly and intelligently digest this information. When it says 14% of installed capacity, that's very different than generation. So this is a sleight of hand, and you have to watch, because the journalists either don't know what they're saying and don't understand what they're saying, and the politicians, or maybe they do, but I've even heard very solid Republican governors get this wrong. I will not name names. When they talk about installed capacity, they're talking about of all the wind installed in this state completely. If it were all blowing at full capacity, that's what we could get in theory, but in real life, the wind doesn't blow all the time, and it certainly doesn't blow at high speeds all the time. So capacity is an optimal amount of production that will never happen. That will never happen in real life. So it doesn't do any good to talk about how much capacity you have. The question is, how much generation do you have? You hear the two words, capacity, generation. Be on guard when you see the word capacity in the reporting. Be careful, because they're bragging about their capacity. That will never be their generation. The generation's usually about a third of the capacity. So always make them be precise. You don't care about the capacity. You care about the generation. That's what's going to determine whether or not you have heat for your home, is the generation. That is all. Capacity, you paid for it. It's sitting there, but it might or might not be working at the moment because the wind might or might not be blowing. If it is blowing, it might be barely blowing. You see the problem. So there you have it. Poor Europe. I'm concerned for them, and I feel bad for them. I see that they're talking about the profits being lost by the world's biggest developer of offshore wind farms. Ørsted said the lower wind speeds had a negative 2.5 billion Danish crowns impact on their bottom line for the first 9 months. This is the money line. There was nothing to suggest that climate change itself played a role in the lower wind speeds, companies in the sector said. Do you see what they're saying? Wait a second. Their whole point is that climate change is happening and accelerating, and this is a problem. Yeah, has anyone stopped to ask? The fact that there's not much wind in Europe right now, is that caused by climate change? And if it's true, then won't it get worse? Won't there be even less wind in the future? So why are we paying for this? I'm going to repeat that line again. Quote, there was nothing to suggest that climate change itself played a role in the lower wind speeds, companies in the sector said. Well, if I were them, I understand, yeah, why they might say that. It's an interesting point. Actually, I don't know. I think that climate change would tend to increase wind speeds, but I have zero. These people seem to think it's irrelevant. That's what the wind companies said. For now, I will say that I'll take that under advisement. I don't know. Going to break. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. And listen, it pains me to have to give advice on how to not have to choose between heating and eating, right? How to save money on your heating bill. You're an American. You are sitting on top of an ocean of natural gas. You should not even have to be thinking about this. You should not even have to be making this choice. But you have no choice because your leadership has failed. They have made bad decisions. And as a result, we have less production. This is, I've talked at length about why we have less production, but it's far more than just opposing pipelines at the Biden administration or ending permits on federal lands and on offshore federal waters. It's more than all that. It's way more than all that because investment looks out a long way ahead and says, where is it safe to put my money? And you have people like Jim Cramer, right, the investment advisor, saying that energy is a permanent short, that it's uninvestable, that because of government regulation, it's a loser, and it's going to be stranded assets. I don't believe any of that. I think it's impossible. I don't believe the government is going to allow millions of people to starve or freeze to death because they don't want to touch fossil fuels. I don't believe it. I don't. Understand, lives are on the line. But listen, there are things you can do, okay, in the short term for as long as we have to put up with this bad policy. And we do for a while. I mean, to some extent, your governor can protect you, right? Because in the United States, much of oil and gas production, at least, is regulated by the states, not the federal government. So some places you still have some activity, but hey, you can't get any money invested in your project because Wall Street is now divesting from oil and gas because, again, of government regulation, making them believe they're going to lose money. So the government is the problem. The market needs certainty. But I'm telling you this, that's why I actually view energy as a good investment. As all this bad press hits it, and people run away from it, but I know that we can't stop it. We can't. I actually think, and I think I know a lot of people in the industry believe they're essential. They're not going away. They can't. You and I have to stay alive. All the same, in the short term, as you are trying to, I feel for you as you're trying to make your bills, pay the grocery bill and the heating bill. How can you try to save any money and make it less painful in the short term? Know this, 20% of Americans could not pay their energy bill last year, at least 1 month. 20%, 1 in 5 could not pay the bill. That's going to be worse this year. I told you the U.S. Energy Information Administration says that essentially propane users will pay 54% more this winter, and heating oil users could see the bills go up 43%. Energy prices up about 33% on the year. Fuel oil is up nearly 60% more expensive, and electricity up 6.5%. Natural gas up 25%. And listen, consider ourselves lucky. You know, you could be Europe. It could be 500%. It could be 600%. In some places it is, right? Here's the deal. What you can do. I feel so pathetic having to say all this. Seriously, we're Americans. We're rich in oil and gas. I can't stand having this conversation, but I must. Number one, check your windows for leaks. I remember my parents doing this every year. Sometimes it's about literally putting caulk around the windows. Sometimes it's about taking a window unit, an AC unit out for the winter. Sometimes it's about putting plastic over the windows and even like blankets, right? In rooms that we didn't use, we actually put some kind of serious insulation around those windows because it saves a lot of money. It's an estimate here that about 15 to 20% of your heat goes out of the windows. You lose it through the windows. So take that seriously. You actually can help yourself a bit there. You can lower your water heater temperature. You can make sure the damper is on your fireplace if you have one. You can obviously follow Jimmy Carter's advice. Turn the thermostat down a few degrees and put on a sweater. I hate saying this. Every fiber of my being hates this. I hate this segment. But I want to help. Okay. Some utility companies, the electric company or the gas company, can actually do an assessment for you, some of them for free, and give you a grade, right, on where you are in terms of being energy efficient. Is some of it's, you know, ridiculous green stuff and appliances that don't work well. But some of it's not. Actually, they can come in with a real professional and tell you how your home compares to the average home, how much energy you're burning, how much you're losing, how efficient you are compared to your neighbors, for example. And if it's free, why not have someone walk through and tell you how to save money? Okay, also make sure the air vents or radiators are not blocked by furniture. Sounds simple, but it's actually pretty common. The average household can save $500 a year if they go through these energy efficient so-called upgrades. Okay, it really means using appliances and other things that don't always work as well, but you save money. I used to have an energy efficient washer and dryer that I hated. I paid someone to take them away and replace them with that's the truth. I thought I'd try it out, and you know, I gave it a sincere college try and I hated it. There were these little guys working in my backyard. You know what? I said, hey, you guys want these? They're like, yeah. So that's what I did. I gave them away. But you do save money. It's true. The EPA says you save, average household can save $500 a year if they undergo these upgrades. Okay. Also, there do exist, and my mom told me about this, people in the Appalachian part of Ohio are taking advantage of these utility-run programs in certain parts of the country, certainly Appalachia, that permit low-income families to have access to energy-saving upgrades at no upfront cost to them. Now, I couldn't believe this, but she was telling me, yeah, like literally a team of people come to your house for free, walk through the house, tell you how to save money, and give you upgrades, give you stuff, and do the work for you. They do the labor of installing new energy-efficient appliances or whatever. And I believe window sealing was part of it. And look, my family bust their tails and have paid taxes all their lives. I said, hey, if any of you qualify for this, you have to be low income. Call them. God knows they make you pay out the nose every paycheck for this stuff. It's in your energy bill. And it's in your tax bill. You would not need their help if you weren't paying all these extra fees that you don't see spelled out for you in the electricity bill and in the tax bill, which pays the subsidies for all this stuff in the first place. You've paid for it. Claim it. Call them. Seriously, call your energy company and ask them what they can do to send a team out and give you the assessment and maybe some taxpayer-funded so-called free stuff. It's not free. It's not free. But it might be free to you, and you've probably paid taxes all of your life. I don't want to be a bad influence. But I want to encourage you. I want to make this winter less painful for you because I care about you. If you're listening to this show, you're a great American or someone on the other side of the world who is learning what it means to be a great American. I went through the JackieDaily.com website analytics, and I see I have my listeners out there in Oceania, China, hello, Europe, the Caribbean, South America. It's amazing. It's amazing. But hey, you know what? Maybe you can learn from our mistakes. I hope you can. Maybe you don't need to. If you're China, you don't need to. Seriously, we've been over this and over this with American oil guys. I'm like, what country has the best energy policy? China. Now, if you want to argue about it, you know where to find me. JackieDaily.com. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. Listen, one reason why I believe that fossil fuels and nuclear energy are here to stay and are not going to be stranded assets or done away with in the 5 to 10 year plans that some governments are proposing or that Sandy Ocasio-Cortez would propose is, number one, we cannot live the lifestyle that people like Sandy Ocasio-Cortez lives without them, but also, as I've told you, world population continues to grow. And as long as that's true, there will actually be heightened demand for these things, not less. We'll need more, not less. I said this years ago when I started my show, and I remember there was a lot of pushback because people were talking about peak oil in the past, and it went from peak oil production to peak oil demand. Here is what I have to say about this now, because people point out, okay, that the counter argument to me is no. With family planning, which didn't exist really until the 1960s, world population is actually going to begin going down. Okay, that's a very like meaningful discussion that could, you know, cut some ice with me. Yeah, if we can prove the world population is going down, absolutely. This would change the way I view demand in the next 10 to 30 years. You look at like Japan, famously, Japan has this negative population growth. It's actually, so it's not growth. And Europe is the same, right? They're not replacing themselves. And so the point is that, wow, with all of this, you know, Planned Parenthood rolling out across the globe and the Gates Foundation and others putting all of this money into rolling out family planning in the third world, we're not going to have more people. We're going to have less. Or pandemics will take out the growth or whatever. Well, I'm not so sure. But I will tell you this. It did catch my attention today on the Wall Street Journal's front page above the fold. There's a headline. Beijing targets low birth rate. Because, you know, they had a one-child policy. This is one of the most populous countries on Earth, at over 1 billion people, much like India and Indonesia also have these enormous populations. So, you know, to not replace themselves was actually the goal, right? The one-child policy was meant to very severely contain population growth. And now, in addition to scrapping that policy from 2016, they finally got rid of it. They actually are seeing in China fertility clinics replacing these abortion clinics, to be graphic about it. Okay, so this is what happens with central planning. You decide, wait a minute, we have some problems here. There are actually a lot of problems that happen with the one-child policy, not only obviously does your population decimate itself, which is a major problem for a country like ours that lives on the Ponzi scheme that is Social Security. You hear what I'm saying? So when Social Security was founded, there were 13 American workers to every one retiree. And then when I was on the Hill, there were 3 workers to every one retiree. We're going to get down to 1-to-1 here pretty soon. Who's going to pay if we don't replace ourselves with people? That's the problem that most Western democratic countries have. In China, they actually are saying, wait a second, maybe we need more people. So they're actually incentivizing people to have more children. So for my purposes, I'm saying, okay, is world population going to go down? I'm not sure. But there was just a lot of interesting stuff here. It was about 40 years ago that China starts the one-child policy. And the leadership there actually put out an open letter in 1980 to their younger generation explaining what the goals were. But now they have less women having babies. They think it's because maybe they're a little older than in the past. And the government actually wants to help them have more children. Apparently, infertility affects about 18% of Chinese couples compared with a global average of 15%. Now, I will predict that number goes up. That number is going to go up dramatically for all kinds of reasons. All kinds of reasons. I have gone into the environmental reasons. Why? Basically, sperm counts are down in the Western world by about 50%. If you can imagine that. And so I saw that some Nordic country was paying teenagers to get frisky. That's a big difference from Appalachia when I grew up. No one needed any incentive. I don't even recognize this world. Don't even recognize this world. But anyway, it could be a very different China, right? I mean, you know, they do have to be concerned about this because they have their problems like everyone else when it comes to social spending. They have to plan ahead. I'm not going to go into the family planning specifics on sterilizations and things like that. It's a little upsetting and perhaps depressing. But look, I think of this in terms of back in the year 2000, the United States actually had more cars on the road, kind of, I think significantly, than China. And in 10 years, that reversed because it's becoming a more motorized, more modernized country. And when you're doing, you know, providing vehicles and other fossil fuel intensive modern comforts to over a billion people. Wow, that's a huge market. Same with India. Same with Indonesia. Same with, you know, third world countries in Africa and South America. I mean, you think about this. All of these places are becoming more modernized and more motorized. And it doesn't much matter if they're rolling out electric cars as opposed to the traditional internal combustion engine car. It's still a fossil fuel powered vehicle. There's no way around that. You know, you plug the Tesla or any electric car into the grid, and it is fed by the exact same thing as the lights in this studio. That means mostly natural gas, then coal, then nuclear in this country. Other countries could be different. Some actually use a lot of oil for electricity, whereas we don't. But the point is, if I am a company selling natural gas or coal or nuclear energy, I'm not at all certain that people like Jim Cramer, who say that energy investments are uninvestable in a long short, in other words, not profitable because they're going to be stranded assets because of policy, I'm not sure I buy that at all, especially if I'm selling to Asia, Asian countries have smarter energy policies than Western countries. They just do. They don't have. They're not susceptible to media pressure, which might or might not have any logic behind it. And they're not going to starve their people. Here, China's actually investing in more people, properly viewing them as an asset, because they are. And you think about it. I was an economics major. When we talk about a market, right? Like, everyone wants into the Chinese market because there are so many consumers. There are so many people to sell to. When you talk about a market, what you're talking about is a population. People. You're talking about the size of the population. How many people are there? You know, I remember in the 80s and 90s, people say, I want to break into my company, you know, into this country's market or this country's market. What they mean is the tens of millions of people in that country. That's all they mean. Markets are people. The more people, the bigger the market. Which is probably why in the U.S. stock market, as an example, it's grown on average 11% per year, even factoring in the Depression, the Great Depression, and all recessions. On average, since inception, about 11% per year. I argue it's because of increased globalization and increased population. It's kind of hard to go down, I'm going to argue. For as long as population goes up, when population goes down, which has never happened in, you know, modern memory, right? Our leaders have always had the benefit of a growing world to buttress their spending and bad habits. What does happen if population goes down? I don't think we quite know what to do about that. But there are a lot of people who want to see the population go down in the name of stopping climate change. That's going to introduce a lot of interesting problems to solve. Whether it's not paying into Social Security or just markets evaporating, disappearing, wealth tanking. I mean, it's very difficult to centrally plan this. I don't look forward to seeing people like Emmanuel Macron and Justin Trudeau try to solve this one. I have no confidence. All right. Let's get a break. I'll come back and talk about something more exciting and sunshiny. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. So things are starting to get scary out there. I don't know if you've been following the parallels between climate change policy and COVID lockdown policy. I don't know if this is obvious to people watching, but essentially, all of the extreme measures that the government is calling upon all the rest of us to take, big sacrifices in our quality of life, our ability to heat our homes as we would like, this is going to be like, you know, COVID is like kind of the real impetus for running the ball down the field for them. Kind of like in the same way that environmental policy can only be solved with global jurisdiction. Wow, pandemics are the same, right? There is no pandemic that is confined to one country. Therefore, they can justify just about anything on the basis that they're protecting themselves, right? We can take extreme action all over the world. Let me give you just a few examples. Number one, a COVID microchip developer says there's no stopping the rollout of his chip, whether we like it or not, is the quote. This guy in Sweden has developed a chip. Yes, a Book of Revelation type chip you put into your skin and it tells your vaccination status. And he's very excited about it and says to you, don't worry, this is not a tracking device. Okay. He's scary enough. At least he's just a businessman. Then you have Justin Trudeau up there in Canada. Canada is super scary. You know, supposedly, this is a British common law tradition country with basic rights of Englishmen developed further, same as us, but they permit far more authoritarian action there, generally speaking. Trudeau gave what my friend in Canada, a virologist, or well, he actually was studied to be a virologist at Caltech and then went to law school with me later, says Trudeau gave the first of his final solution speeches, albeit in French. Here it is. Quote, we are going to end this pandemic by proceeding with the vaccination. We all know people who are deciding whether or not they are willing to get vaccinated, and we will do our very best to try to convince them. However, there is still a part of the population that is fiercely against it. They don't believe in science and progress, and they are very often misogynistic and racist. It's a very small group of people, but that doesn't shy away from the fact they take up some space. Did you hear that? They take up some space. This leads us, as a leader and as a country, to make a choice. Do we tolerate these people? Do we tolerate these people? These are direct quotes from Justin Trudeau. Over 80% of the population of Quebec have done their duty by getting the shot. They are obviously not the issue in this situation. Okay, so Trudeau does not understand how herd immunity works and how vaccinations work. At 80%, they've already exceeded herd immunity. And of course, he gives no credibility to natural immunity. But the reason I bring this up is that right now, there are experts. I'm told by my friend Mark Murano, writing in Climate Depot. He says this, there's a paper published in a prestigious journal lamenting democracy and calling for authoritarian environmentalism modeled after COVID lockdowns to fight the climate emergency. To me, the parallels are obvious. Here it is. This is the abstract excerpt. Quote, now I'm not paraphrasing. Is authoritarian power ever legitimate? While under normal conditions, maintaining democracy and rights is typically compatible with guaranteeing safety. In emergency situations, conflicts between these two aspects of legitimacy can and often do arise. A salient example of this is the COVID-19 pandemic, during which severe limitations on free movement and association have become legitimate techniques of government. Climate change poses an even greater threat to public safety. Consequently, I argue, legitimacy may require a similarly authoritarian approach. Unquote. This is, make sure, it's the American Political Science Review, 2021. It's titled Political Legitimacy, Authoritarianism, and Climate Change by Ross Mitiga, Mitiga. You can check out his work. He continues, while unsettling, this suggests the political importance of climate action. If we wish to avoid legitimizing authoritarian power, we must act to prevent crises from arising that can only be resolved by such means. That's rather scary. And when you have Justin Trudeau, the leader of Canada, saying these people who are unvaccinated are taking up space and asking, do we tolerate these people? That sounds kind of Hitler-esque to me. I mean, my first thought was, you know, if we had leaders who knew their history, they would never talk like this. And then I thought, no, you know what? He knows exactly what he's saying. He knows exactly what he's saying. His father was also, likewise, a leader of Canada. Okay, they've been in this business for a long time. They've been watching for a long time. His father would have remembered the Second World War and had direct firsthand accounts given to him as well. More likely, if the people of Canada knew their history, they wouldn't tolerate this. Scary talk. scary talk from Justin Trudeau. And he's not the only one, by the way. Also, I have here a quote from Emmanuel Macron of France. He, too, can be scary when he wants to be, apparently. And he says, he denounced France's 5 million unvaccinated as, quote, non-citizens. And vows, quote, I really want to hack them off. I won't use the curse word here. And so we will continue to do so to the bitter end. That's the strategy, says Macron. At the World Economic Forum is where the photograph here is accompanying this quote. So that, just handed to me by Jeff Fisher. I actually have my own Macron quotes here, but here we have it. This is CNN World. He says, in an interview with Le Parisien, he says, quote, I'm not for hacking off the French. Now the unvaccinated, them, I really want to hack off. And we're going to keep doing it to the end. This is a strategy. Quote, I'm not going to put them in jail. I'm not going to put them in jail. And I'm not going to forcibly vaccinate them. And so you have to tell them. From January 15, you will no longer be able to go to the restaurant, be able to have a drink, go for a coffee, to the theater. You will no longer go to the movies, Macron told La Parisienne. When my freedom threatens that of others, I become irresponsible, he said. An irresponsible person is no longer a citizen. Okay, am I remembering correctly that the book of Revelation says, you will not be able to buy or sell without the chip. They didn't call it a chip, they called it a mark, okay? I'm saying the book was written like in 70 AD. How did someone 2,000 years ago manage to foresee what Macron might say? Coupled with this Swedish developer of the new controversial COVID microchip embedded in the skin. This person says, hey, Swedish startup tech company who's invented the scannable microchip that goes into your arm, displaying your vaccine status. He says, hey, the technology's there and you're going to have it whether you like it or not. The company is Disruptive Subdermals. Pre-programmable. It's 2 millimeters by 16 millimeters. Criticized as invasive. I should think so. This is, and someone on Twitter says, this just plays into the narrative of they want to track you, conspiracy theorists. Okay. What a trusting soul. That would not be me. Yeah, this guy assures you that you have nothing to worry about with his technology being implanted under your skin. And you see here a photo of a young woman using it. She just holds her phone up to her arm, sort of where the beneath the thumb, I would say, on the back of the hand. He says, this technology exists and is used whether we like it or not. I'm happy it's brought into the public conversation. New technologies must be broadly debated and understood. Smart implants are a powerful health technology. That sounds so nice. Doesn't he sound polite as he wants to stick his millimeters worth of chip under your skin? He says it's transformative healthcare on a global scale. While new in humans, this kind of technology is very common for household pets. Is that supposed to make us feel good? Okay, it's about 100 euros. Again, you scan with a mobile phone. There will be a PDF appearing showing all the details of the person's EU digital COVID certificate, indicating their vaccination status and whether or not they are positive for COVID. The man from the company with the chip says, quote, this means it's always accessible for me and for anyone else, really, who wants to read me. For example, if I go to the movies or to a shopping center, then people will be able to check my status even if I don't have my phone. Yeah, for the many people who are skeptical, he assures that implants are not tracking devices and are only in use when they are scanned. Okay. He explained, if you understand how these implants work, they don't have a battery. They cannot transmit a signal by themselves. So they're basically passive. They just sit there asleep. They can never tell your location. Well, why would they need to? Your phone does that. Okay, I was quoting myself there. He says they're only activated when you touch them with your smartphone. So this means they cannot be used for tracking anyone's location. I don't know about you. It doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy feeling. This Trudeau and Macron bunch need to go. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. I was looking this morning at Real Clear Energy, and they have this link to this Fox Business story. It's titled, Oil Executive Calls Out Biden, quote, stop opposing our industry, unquote. I'm like, who is this bad butt? Got the cojones to take on the president. And guess what? I clicked on it. It was Chris Wright from Oilfield Services, Liberty Frack. A repeat offender on the Jackie Daily Show. One of my favorite guests. He's been on many times. If you missed it, it's online. Real Clear Energy. It's actually very cool. And I saw him today on CNBC as well. Chris is taking him on. Totally fearless. And here on another piece from Climate Depot. I just like the headline. I want to share it with you. Meteorologist calls Biden's tornado climate link, quote, utter bull crap. And, quote, directly opposite to the clear observational evidence, unquote. December tornadoes are not rare. Tornadoes used to be blamed on global cooling back in the 1970s. This was Chris Martz commenting, this is utter bull. Loney. Actually, I didn't say that, but the Jackie Daily Show is rated PG. Now keep it clean for your kids. But in fact, there is no trend in U.S. tornado activity since 1954. But EF3s and above are down 50%. Did you know that? Let me tell you something. As a Texan, I know about EF3s. We had a doozy rip through our neighborhood, a couple years ago. Houses were gone after that. But apparently those are more rare since 50%, I think it says since 1954. Amazing. Climatologist Dr. Roy Spencer, quote, to claim global warming as a cause for tornadoes is directly opposite to the clear observational evidence. Even the UN IPCC disagrees with Biden. Extreme weather expert Dr. Pilkey Jr. notes, the UN IPCC, no, sorry, it's only two C's, I'm just joking, states, quote, trends in tornadoes associated with severe convective storms are not robustly detected. That's the UN talking, okay? That's the UN talking. So, relax. I'm very sorry for the people in Kentucky. That's close to home for me. I hear things are doing a little better now. They're recovering. Please help them. If you are able and moved in your heart, please. It was quite severe. And back home in Appalachia. Okay, moving on. I see the Wall Street Journal has finally grown some parts on the election. Here in the opinion page, this is from the editorial board, quote, Zuckerbucks shouldn't pay for elections. It fans mistrust to let private donors fund official voting duties. For those of you who did not hear the story, it is determined that Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook man, funneled between $300 and $400 million. $300 to $400 million into the 2020 election. Mostly doing get out the vote kind of stuff in blue areas, like, say, Fulton County, Georgia, for example. The journal describes 2020, the 2020 pandemic election as a, quote, super spreader of bad precedents. Even now, they say the information continues to come out on just how much private money underwrote official government voting efforts in 49 states. This is very similar to what I was telling you about Michael Bloomberg funding lawyers to be in attorneys general offices. Like the chief financial executive crime and law enforcement officer of a state now has private money putting people inside that office. And that office can sick those people onto whomever they want. Right? There's a lot of prosecutorial discretion. This to me is the same thing. We should not permit law enforcement offices to be for rent to billionaires, nor should we let election offices be open for billionaires to, you know, flood it with their own people. They're paying these people. If you haven't read Molly Hemingway's book on this, it's called Rigged. She goes into in-depth analysis of the money that came out of the Center for Technology and Civic Life, or CTCL, funded by Mark Zuckerberg. It apparently gave $350 million to nearly 2,500 election departments in the 2020 election. Last month, it posted its 990s with 199 pages of grants to support, quote, the safe administration, unquote, of voting during COVID-19. And this is what the Capital Research Center refers to as Zuckbucks. Or Zuckerberg bucks, depending on who you ask. They consistently gave more money to counties that voted for Biden. In Georgia, as one example, the grants were $1.41 per head in Trump areas and $5.33 spent in Biden areas. A Wisconsin group says that their work probably turned out about 8,000 votes for Biden. Oh, I'd say it was a lot more than that, my friend. I can't say for sure, but I'd say 8,000 is pretty conservative for the amount of money being infused. The biggest check went to New York City. Now, the journal says if this is about flipping America blue, that seems like a waste of money. Also, some money went to red areas. And they point to a county in Mississippi. They received over $300,000. And they installed plastic shields, bought more voting machines to prevent lines, and hired workers to sanitize equipment. Blah, blah, blah. Hey, why not throw a bone here or there to muddy the waters? If you have a goal, you can point to that and say, see, this doesn't fit the narrative. If you're spending between $300 and $400 million, what's 300 grand or a little more to some county in Mississippi for hand sanitizer, right? Okay. And then they go on to say, well, how do we untangle partisan bias from urban bias? Big cities have big voting problems. Maybe they were more likely to ask for help. Well, probably not, since this group never even gave out money until 2020. How would you even know? I would bet there was a campaign to let them know that they had money available. So they say only two places in Nevada received grants, Vegas and Reno. Do they know that almost all the population is concentrated in those places? No other county has 60,000 people. Anyway, they at least admit there are good questions to be asked about this. If Republicans take the House, they probably will. But no matter what, the journal's coming out and saying private election funding is inappropriate and people distrust it, obviously. The They give examples. Okay, here's National Vote at Home Institute. The journal says became awfully cozy in Green Bay. In one email, one of their fellows offered assistance with follow-up on rejected mail votes, saying curing ballots might be something we could take off your plate. The clerk declined. See, this can get into some funny business. If you don't have very strong supervision, things like curing ballots, you know, curing means there's something wrong with this ballot for which it would be rejected under normal circumstances. So it doesn't have a signature, or these signatures don't match what's on file, or it's the wrong address. Okay, depending on what state you're talking about, this can mean different things. But do you really want to let Mark Zuckerberg, you know, give people money to cure other people's ballots? Come on. To even pretend like, well, this maybe it says mistrust. You know, it's worse than says mistrust. We don't need Zuckerberg having his people cure our ballots, okay? Okay. Apparently the clerk who, in this example, opposed outside influence. But 2 weeks before the voting, she went on leave and then resigned, citing clashes with the mayor's office. Quote, he allowed staff who were not educated on election law to run the election, along with people who weren't even City of Green Bay employees, even though it's the clerk's job to administer an election. This is Wisconsin, again. They go on, you know, the rebuttal was, well, they had no decision-making authority, didn't assist with matters involving actual ballots. Well, they volunteered to help cure ballots. I'm not sure what the distinction is here, or if there is one. So this group, Zuckbucks funded group, offers advisory services. And and brings in people from basically leftist think tanks to help you. You know, if you're confused, they can advise. And so they ask the question, look, what would happen if some Republican billionaire did the exact same thing and said, hey, let me send in Heritage Foundation to help you run your election, and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and that girl Jackie over at the Jackie Daily Show. We'll send her, and she can tell you how to run this thing. You think some Democrat governor might care who's on the ballot? I don't know. I mean, you can trust me. But anyway, this is ridiculous. States claim they needed this money because of COVID. Okay, they needed masks, and they needed plastic, and they needed workers to sanitize and all this business. That's the excuse. But it shouldn't be done with private money. It should. You're a taxpayer. You already paid for that. It should be enough. You're listening to the Jackie Daily Show.